Welcome to Speak Up International with Rita Burke and Elton Brown.
As their name implies, Speak Up International has had the opportunity of speaking to people from all over the world. We've interviewed people from Brazil, from Mexico, from England, from South Africa, from Canada. Today we are going to be speaking to a woman from Texas in the United States of America. Her name is Jessica Merian. I would like Jessica today to tell us in about five sentences about Jessica.
Okay, my name is Jessica Merian. I am from Galveston, Texas, and I live there with my husband of 22 years and our three children. One is 22, so he's actually living in Utah right now. My other daughter is 16 and my youngest son is 10. I have a master's degree in curriculum and instruction design for Weber State University in Ogden, Utah. And I'm an advocate for women. I've been in the education business for near 15 years, and I'm just excited to be here and talk to you today.
Wonderful. Thank you. So you completed the circle for us in terms of your bio. Jessica. Yes. Your bio says that you are involved with body positivity. You're an advocate.
Yes,
please
ma'am.
Tell us what that means.
I think that we have lived in a society that puts a lot of pressure on the way that women look and the way that they feel about themselves in terms of many things, to include motherhood, our involvement in community, and just the way we look, period. And I would like to create a world where we just are able to love ourselves, where women are just able to love ourselves. And I think that true like self-love and body positivity comes with the embodiment of loving your menstrual cycle. And I don't think that there'll ever be like balloons and celebration around your menstrual cycle, but I do believe that it's an important part of being a woman and an important part of being able to love yourself completely.
So how many years have you been part of this project?
Okay, so I think that I have been an advocate for a lot of years of my education degree and in teaching. I was always trying to help my own students just find a way to navigate. I worked with special education students, those students with what society calls a disability. And I always wanted to let them see that they had so much more about them. They were artists and they were builders and they were thinkers, and that their disability didn't define them. In that, it's led me kind of on this path of encouraging women to love their bodies wholly, because I would see the girls and they would be shamed, or they'd be, you know, nervous, they would hide their pads or hide their tampons or be afraid to talk about what they were going through. I heard many teachers talk about like, oh, they're just using it as an excuse. And I think that we haven't created enough comfort around menstruation that it's looked at like that, like it's just an excuse that women go through, you know, a time of the month where they're shedding lining of their insides, and they aren't giving enough grace in America. I'm not sure about other countries, but they're not given enough grace in America for these things.
Well, Jessica, I certainly applaud you for taking on that subject matter. So I need to ask about your book, First Moon. What inspired the writing, please?
My own daughter inspired it. So in April 2020, we were in COVID and she had her first menstruation. She was 13 at the time. And I knew that I wanted her to have just such a vastly different experience than I did when it came to menstruation. I had a very hard relationship with my own menstrual cycle as I grew up and as I was an adult even. My cycle was irregular, heavy. I had issues getting pregnant, just so many things. And so I wanted to, from the beginning, create a positive place for her to land and for her to feel accepted and loved and for her to just really create a really good relationship with her menstrual cycle. And in doing that, I reached out to family and friends for letters of advice because we were in COVID, so people couldn't just come by and, you know, be with her. So we created these letters. And as we got the letters, we sat there and we read these letters and we cried. We just cried when the advice came in from her family and our friends. It was just so incredibly magical. And as I sat there and I saw her getting emotional over just the support that she was feeling, I just knew that I wanted every young female to feel that way. I wanted every young girl to feel that she was loved and supported and held in this space, and that it was okay, that this is something that happens to 50% of the population, either will have, has, or has had a period. And I wanted every girl to feel that way. And that's why I started the First Moon Manual.
Oh, there were, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a collection of stories by many, I won't say many, but by several women, if I'm correct. Is that correct? Can you tell us a little bit about the other women that helped produce this book? You don't have to give me their names or anything like that.
Absolutely. So I think maybe something I like that inspired me when I was writing this and compiling and thinking about it was Chicken Soup for the Soul. Do you guys remember those books? There's hundreds of them now, Chicken Soup for the Soul. They have a collection of stories by other people that are inspiring and loving. And that's what really inspired me. But I wanted to make it more interactive, and I wanted to include other things like art, because I love spaces where there is art and there is words and it all just flows together. So the First Moon Manual has letters, art, and poetry by 24 amazing women. And I wanted to make sure that it looked that any girl who picked it up was able to feel like it included her. So it's diverse. The women who contributed are diverse. Some were teachers. One's a menstruation poet. One is a typewriter poet who creates poems on her typewriter. And then the third is a spoken word poet. And June of 2022 is when I released the book. And that same month, she was named Poet Laureate of Ogden, Utah. So it was just really, it was just really cool. And Akemi, the artist, she's the one who gave us all the art, and she has an affirmation word. So I wrote the affirmation to go with it. And her art is just beautiful. She creates very empowering, beautiful art. Wow. And it like feels so magical. After every letter, there's a reflection space with a question. I know it's hard to see, but this reflection says, how does it feel to know my body and my cycle mirrors the moon? And then there's creative space where they can draw. And so many incredible women contributed to this. I mean, they're just so, they had the words that came together from this, some of the advice, some of the love, it's just incredible. It's hard to put it into words, you know, it's hard to talk about it because it's so moving. One of the letters says, you know, if I ever forget how capable and wonderful I am, I look in the mirror and say, I'm the miracle my mom needed. I'm the life force that broke through all odds to be here. I will continue to make the impossible possible. Like, how powerful is that, right? Like, I will continue to make the impossible possible. And that was from a daycare owner.
How did these women feel after they had written their contribution to this book? What did they feel was most beneficial?
So that is the magical part that happened. So I got so much feedback. Every woman who sent me a letter said a few things. One was that it helped them heal a part of themselves that they didn't even know they needed to heal, which was incredible. Another person said, what I asked one from a person who didn't have any daughters, and she said, I don't have anything to say. And I'm like, well, maybe if you dig deep. And she did. And she wrote the most beautiful letter about how she was told she was supposed to be a woman, you know, and she had her menstrual cycle at like 10. And she's like, what did that even mean? And for a long time, she was a tomboy and just kind of hated her cycle and just tried to push that part off. But when she finally accepted her femininity and accepted that as part of herself, it's when she really grew into the person that she is. And so every person who contributed has been incredibly grateful and excited. And I think that it's a really cool thing, because anytime this is like tagged on social media or it and they're tagged in it, they're holding space for the women who are reading it, right? So they're reminded, and I think they think about it often anyways, but I think it reminds them, and then all of a sudden they're holding space. So imagine you have 24 women holding space for you at any given time. Like, isn't that an incredible thing?
Certainly awesome. Certainly awesome, I would say.
Thank
now,
you.
Jessica, based on your bio, you studied journalism. Have you ever pursued that as a career?
I did not pursue it. I did the crime beat for a radio station as an internship in 2006. It was right before my husband got deployed. And once he got deployed, a five-year-old son at the time with him, our oldest son. And as I moved back in with my gravel under the foundations of homes at that time, I always, when I pursued my journalism degree, I was the features editor for our college newspaper, Weber State University. And I won awards for the design aspect of how I would design them together in our feature section. That was really, I think that it was always there, but it didn't seem like a possibility. And it's one of the things that I'm trying to encourage my own children to follow whatever they want to do and not think that something's not a possibility. Because I was told so much that, oh, if you're in journalism, you won't make any money, and newspapers don't pay anything, and how can you ever do anything? And our family business during the housing market bust back in 2009 ended up taking our family business under. And I got into education. And through education, I found a new calling, right? It was just this desire to help students. I worked in Ogden, Utah, and we had a majority of Hispanic students. And in 2010, my thoughts are that they were misunderstood. My husband was Hispanic, so he would tell me, you know, we were in a mostly white population, Ogden, Utah. And he would tell me how hard it was, and he would explain things to me. And so I started to advocate for our Hispanic students. And from there, I think it just grew. I wanted to advocate for students with disabilities because they're so misunderstood. And then I just stepped into this career of, or this passion, this purpose of connecting people in a way that supports other women, right?
And when you make these connections, either for yourself or for other women to connect, what is the benefit for those types of connections?
That's such a great question. In this world, we're more connected than we've ever been, it feels like. But yet we're also so very alone. So we have the ability to be on social media and see people from all over the world, yet we're still sitting kind of alone in our homes and scrolling through our phones, and that's kind of where our connection is. So the purpose of this is to hold a space for women where they feel like they're actually really connected to like a tribe or a community. And the reflection space allows them to connect with themselves. And I do think that we're very disconnected from ourselves these days.
I like that statement, Jennifer, when you said that even though we're connected, sometimes we're still disconnected. And I think it's so important for us to keep that in mind. We need to be intentional about that. Now, do you remember a time when you had to say enough? Could you share that with our listeners, please?
A time when I had to say enough, just to anybody or?
To anybody or about anything.
Okay. Yes. My most recent position, things happened that didn't align with my morals and my values in that situation. And I had to come to the decision to resign my position. And I did that last year, in June of 2022. I loved the position I had. I was an administrator for an after-school program. So I had six schools under me. I worked with six site coordinators. They went to the schools. They did the program. I connected. That's where I found my love of connecting community. I would connect, you know, the little red box, which was like a grocery, like low income grocery, to our chefs, and our chefs would do a Zoom. So, and the parents would all get a bag of groceries that included all the ingredients for that night. And they would be able to cook with a chef that was down in Galveston from a restaurant. So it was like this really cool connection of people and resources. And so leaving that position was extremely hard. But I was losing sleep. You know, I was literally so incredibly stressed out because I knew that while nothing was affecting me like head on, but it was affecting the people around me. It was affecting our students. And to me, it wasn't the right thing. So that's when I finally said enough. And I just pursued creating this manual, publishing the manual last year, June of 2022. And then took a little bit of a hibernation to raise my family because I had been working full time. And then my husband got deployed. And now here we are.
So how has your extensive experience in grant management shaped your vision for improving educational institutions?
That's a deep one. So I'm not sure my calling is to be in educational institutions anymore. I have very strong feelings about how the educational institutions are being run right now. And I'm unsure if that this is the appropriate platform to talk about that. That being said, I really think that our students need to be taught for a future. And we seem to be teaching from the past. We're not using technology in a way that's educating students. We're still punishing them for their technology. And it's really hard because I feel like my own children sometimes will ask me something like, why didn't you just Google it, right? And they're like, what do you mean? Like, just tell me the answer. And I'm just blown away that they're still depending on me, but they're like supposed to be the technology, you know, generation. I think that it's difficult because I'm very tech savvy. I can figure things out most of the time. And so it's frustrating to me to watch them sit in classes all day and still do rote memorization. And I've watched the grant. I used my platform with a grant to better not only the students, but the community around me. And I've watched other grants not do that. So it's very difficult to be watching that. And I just don't know if I answered your question.
I think you answered the question. So I know that you have a passion for empowering children and supporting your community because you just said that. So how does that align with your career aspirations in education leadership?
I think I've a little bit, again, gotten away from the education leadership, and I am really focused on the First Moon Manual. The First Moon Manual is the first in many manuals that I am hoping to develop. I would like to do support manuals for people going through hard things. At this moment, they're focused on women. So new mom, parenting is a hard thing when you have a child, especially when you have 6 weeks or less of maternity leave here in the U.S. The lack of sleep and trying to take care of a baby and trying to juggle your career is just a difficult thing. So I'd like to make a manual, you know, with experience and love surrounded around that. One on new marriages. I've been married 22 years. It has not always been easy. Marriage is a full-time job. It's something that has been a challenge, and I want to support young couples on that so that they don't feel like they have to give up, you know, or that's their only choice. I would like to write a manual supporting divorce. I've met a lot of divorcees, and they're struggling and they're hurting right now. And I want to ensure that we're empowering them to feel loved and that they're not failures. And menopause is a huge topic right now that many women have come to me about, and they want a manual supporting them in menopause. There's not a lot of information about that. But I think when it comes to educational leadership, what I'm doing is I'm hoping to educate people, but in an emotional and mental health way, and in a way that just empowers them to just love themselves so much more.
I saw a film that portrayed Indian women who lived in shame. And when they had their period, they were more or less pushed into a room and closed the door. And they were considered unclean until they finished or got through their cycle. And the one gentleman who actually created a cheaper pad for women was basically thrown out of India. Because everyone was stuck to that old belief. So I'm just wondering, when you are dealing with individuals, do you ever find women, do you ever find them stuck in antiquated beliefs? I don't know, bring them up to the 21st century and say, hey, you know, you don't have to live in a cave, you know, while you're going through your cycle.
I've been very blessed that the women that have come into my life have been very excited about this. They do. I think it gives them a space to talk about their shame and the things that they've been through. I've had many women around my age, a little bit older, even 10 years younger, say, yeah, I felt so ashamed. I just felt dirty. I didn't know what to do. Nobody talked to me about it. So I think that it's still relevant right now. I'm very blessed that my daughter is very open with me, and she talks to me a lot about it. And she says, well, now we're fine. We're like, yeah, I'm just on my period and it's okay. And I think the tide is changing. And I think that took the women who felt like they didn't have acceptance when they were young to change it. And they're having those conversations. So I haven't had to bring anybody into the 21st century. And I've even had men who've been really excited about talking about this, and that I have a book on it. They think that it's a really good platform. They're there for it as well. I haven't had anyone who's been antiquated talk to me yet, knock on wood.
It sounds to me as if you are providing a healthy forum for people to talk about issues that are very important for them and to them. And it's bringing our world into a different century. And I'm really impressed with that. Now, way back, as we started to talk, you expressed some concerns about teaching from the past as opposed to teaching in the future. Could you expand on that statement for me, please?
Yes, ma'am, I can. So there are so many countries who are leading education right now. Finland is one of them, right? And they don't require homework, and they have breaks, and they have kids move. But we're still in the classroom. If you walk into a classroom, children are still being told to sit down and be quiet and don't talk to each other. But if you think about the world we live in, I mean, how often are you just sitting down, being quiet and listening to somebody? So often, even in the workplace, we have to work with other people. We have to collaborate. We need to be talking. We need to be figuring problems out together. You're very, very few people are figuring out problems alone. Also, when it comes to things like math, there's so much math I don't know, but I can go straight online. And now, especially with the new AI that's been coming out, I can come out and I can figure out any math problem that there is, or at least figure out how to figure it out by looking that up. So what are we doing in our schools? We're still saying, memorize these spelling words, memorize your times tables. And we're not, to me, again, this is just my humble opinion, to me, we're not teaching in a way that is creating a future leader. When we have AI that comes in and starts taking over many of these jobs, and many of the things that people have been doing, we're creating a space for people to do more, to really solve world problems, to solve hunger, to solve the homeless situation, to solve housing issues, to solve all these things. But are we creating a generation of children who in the future can think about solving those things if they are so busy still memorizing their times table?
Yes, it certainly does answer my question. Thank you. I wasn't sure what you meant by that. Jessica sounds to me as if she is a budding social activist. So who's responsible for who you are today? Who or what is responsible for who you are today?
Who's responsible for who I am today? I would say, of course, my parents definitely had a hand in that, especially my mom. This is kind of a funny side story. I hope we have time for it. When I had first started my period, I was in about junior high, so 7th or 8th grade. And I went into the school gym locker room and a girl came in. It was kind of the mean girl of the school. And she made a comment about how she could smell that somebody was on their period. And I was mortified. Now, looking back, I can say like probably half of the girls on their period, right? Or at least a quarter or, you know, but I was mortified. And so I refused to dress out for PE anymore because I didn't want to be embarrassed by this mean girl. So my mom asked me why I did not dress up for PE and failed PE, because that's what happens when you don't dress out, you fail. Even though I still participated, I failed for not dressing up. I said that I thought the money should be spent on books and art, not on sports, because enough money went to sports. So I was making a stand. And she was like, okay, you're making a stand. So I think that while I can't remember an exact moment or something that she did, she obviously believed me at that point. And she was the one who had given me the voice to believe in books and art. So she has a, you know, my mom. And then I think that my husband and my kids are also responsible for who I am. I have mom guilt. You know, I'm a 22-year-old son and I had him when I was 22. And my husband was deployed the first 6 years of his life. He was out of the country 4 years of that, off and on. And so I wasn't the best mom. And I had a lot of guilt around that until I really started to think about, like, I'm a cycle breaker. And my husband's a cycle breaker. My husband's a first generation high school graduate, college graduate, and now master's degree. You know, he's a first generation like homeowner. Like, so when I think of the cycles we broke, I had all this guilt because I'm a way better mom to my 16-year-old and my 10-year-old than I was to my 22-year-old. But I really had to think about that. And I was like, you know, I was still busy breaking cycles. I was breaking the alcoholism cycle. I was breaking the, you know, cigarette smoking cycle. I was breaking the drug addiction cycle. I was breaking the college cycle. So all these things that I know that I'm a better mom now, and I wasn't a great mom back then, but I was so busy breaking cycles and trying to better myself. And all that's due to him. Like, he was my first and he made me want to be a better person, you know? And as I had more children, I just wanted to be better for them. So they're responsible for who I am.
Jessica, how long have you been living in Texas?
We moved here in 2018. So we were living in Utah from 2007 to 2018. And in 2018, we moved to Galveston, Texas. My husband's from Galveston originally. So we moved back to be around family. So we've been here for 5 years.
And do you prefer living in Texas as opposed to where you were living before?
I definitely prefer the weather, even though sometimes it's a little bit too hot. I do not. So we were in Ogden, Utah, and it was cold and snowy, and I do not like the snow. I don't ski or do any winter sport, and I do not like being cold. So I definitely prefer being here when it's warmer or in the winter when there's no snow. That being said, I mean, Utah has some very beautiful places. I've been very blessed in where I was. So the mountains in Utah are so gorgeous. I was just speaking at the Utah Humanities Book Fest October 13th, and I got to see the colors. And, you know, the colors are just so beautiful in the trees, and it's just amazing. It's just like the mountains are on fire, but they're just so beautiful. But then I get to live in Galveston, Texas. I get to live in Galveston, Texas, where we have the Gulf of Mexico and it's the ocean and it's beautiful. And it's just this really nice big body of water, and it's an island. So there's palm trees. And so I don't think I prefer one over the other. I think I just love everywhere.
So you mentioned about the book fair. Can you give us a little more information about the book fair and what were you doing there?
Yeah, the Utah Humanities Book Fest is a book festival every year, and they bring in different authors to speak about their books. Who's the poet laureate of Ogden right now, I connected with her back in July, and she's on the Book Fest committee. And she mentioned that they were looking for speakers and authors. And I looked at her and she's like, I didn't even think. And I was like, okay. So she connected me with the coordinator. Him and I had a Zoom meeting. We talked about the book and what my mission was. And he was so supportive. As a matter of fact, they don't usually buy authors' books, but they purchased books because they didn't want any girl to walk out of there without one. That's how important he thought this was. So I got to go up to Ogden. And like I said, my son's living there. So I was able to visit my son and his partner and his stepdaughter, her daughter. And I got to speak, and I had some of my former students who showed up and former colleagues. And it was really nice to stand up and talk about what inspired me and how it is to create community and just all the great things that I believe Personal Emmanuel does.
You know, inspiration is a wonderful gift to give to other individuals. What would you think, or what would you say is the benefit for passing or giving such gift?
Well, I think that so often, like I said, I was kind of told when I was younger, like writing wasn't really a career or it wasn't going to make me any money. And the problem is that's not the truth. And when people really live their purpose and their passion, whatever that is, it took me a long time to really figure mine out. And I think I really only needled it out like 2 months ago completely. But when you inspire other people to live their purpose and their passion, I mean, lives change, the world changes, right? Because that's what we do. We serve others. My book isn't about selling books. It's about changing the narrative around the stigma, right? So it's about serving other people. It's about allowing girls to be who they are and to love who they are and to love every piece of themselves, not just most of themselves, but not that part, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that when we inspire other people to really live their purpose and their passion, we are changing the world. We're allowing people to serve and to love and to be who they really are.
I like what you said about your book and the rationale or intent behind it to help inspire people. Now, on Speak Up International, we seek to inform, to inspire, and to educate. And I think listening to your story certainly is helping us to meet those goals. Now, could you think of the advice or counsel that you would consider to be the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
There's so much. One of the best pieces that I'm living my life by right now is let it be easy. So anything that seems hard, I don't need to fight for it. I can just let things flow. I also think that do it anyway is one of the best pieces of my life. So not everybody, you could be the juiciest peach in the world, isn't that what they say? But not everybody likes peaches, and that's okay. And I had to really had a lot of fear when I was doing this book about what people would say and how I'd be received and any negative feedback that would come, because it just does. Because we have a lot of people who are living in a place that I believe they're not truly happy. And so they go and they attack other people. So especially people who are living their best lives and spreading messages and really trying to help people. So you always have someone who's going to say something. Either they won't like the layout or the design or the way it was done or the letters or who contributed or whatever. And so just do it anyway. Let it be easy. Do it anyway. It's okay. It's just okay. Hey. I'm enough.
Hey, I'm a strong believer in do it anyway. And why not? Because if you don't, who will? And I want to say thank you so much, Jessica, for allowing us to spend some time together. Even though we are in Canada and you are in Texas, the beauty of Zoom is that there is no bounds in terms of where we can connect. And I can see through your use of higher education, you've been able to connect with children, females, to be exact, in order to take away the stigma and the shame of going through something so natural as their period. The fact that you have a book out and that you have been pushing the book to answer a lot of other questions that other women may have about the process a woman goes through monthly. I think the book is extremely beneficial to most women and to men, because a lot of men have no clue, even though they've been married to a woman for years. They really don't have a clue in terms of what actually is happening during this time. So I could see how that book would be extremely beneficial for men to gain a clue. So I want to thank you so much, Jessica, for spending time with us on Speak Up International. And when you are ready and you have some new developments, please let us know, because we would definitely want to know what they are.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Speak Up! Exclamation Point International. If you would like to contact Jessica Madian, please visit her website at www.jmmedellin.com, where you can leave your contact information. Would you like to be interviewed and your cause promoted by Speak Up! Exclamation Point International? Please drop us a message containing your name, company name, the service you provide to your community, and email address to info@speakuppodcast.ca. You can reach us using Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To connect to our podcast, use Spotify or your favorite podcast platform and search for Speak Up! Exclamation Point International. You can also find our podcast using our web address, www.speakuppodcast.ca. Our logo has the woman with her finger pointing up, mouth open, speaking up. At Speak Up! Exclamation Point International, we aim to inspire, to inform, and to educate.